Welcome back to episode 3 of Literally Books, the podcast. We're going to be your humble hosts. My name is Magda.
And I'm Lindsay.
And today we're going to be talking about the best and worst adaptations of book to movies. We're kind of excited. Although, you know, this is according to us. Like, this is not going to be based on some random fancy critical thing. It's just going to be in our opinions. But you know what? We are critics.
I was going to say, What do you mean? We are fancy. We are critical.
We are. We are very judgy. But yeah, it should be fun. So kind of get your thoughts to you on it. So after we're done, and if you agreed, fully disagreed, or if there's something else out there that we need to be watching that we haven't yet, please send that over.
Yeah. So our caveat for today is these are all books that we have both read and have watched either a movie or a series and felt like it was a really great version or a really good interpretation of that content material or a really bad one, which I'm so excited to talk about these.
Yeah, the bad ones are going to be, I think that's where we're going to thrive.
So much shade to throw. So much.
We're going to thrive.
How was your week?
It was good.
Start us out.
No. Yeah, it was really good. We had the eclipse this week, which was kind of nice. We were very, very lucky that we were in the path of totality.
I was living, I don't know if you saw these, but like right outside of Austin, they were implementing all of these like billboards, and they were like very strange looking in that it was just enormous text that would say path of totality, pathoftotality.org. And under any other circumstance, you'd be like, that's a cult. That's for sure a cult. But
very doomsday.
It's very doomsday. But if you go to the website, it's like, oh, this is just like really helpful information and travel guides for being in Texas during the eclipse. It was great.
It was a very dramatic few weeks. Like, I remember watching the news and they were like, get your groceries, fill up your gas because it's going to be a madhouse. And like, it was fine. I think maybe everything was really well organized that I didn't feel like it was such a hot mess. But, you know, we were in a little Austin bubble, so who knows what happened outside of that.
But you watched it.
I did.
Did you think it was amazing?
I actually did. I had never experienced a total eclipse. Mm-hmm. I think we've gotten to see a few partial ones in different cities, but nothing like totality. Although I will say I was expecting it to be like nighttime, super pitch dark.
My mom said the same thing. No, she was like, was it black outside? And I'm like, no. There's still sun.
That's what I was expecting. And like, my husband was like, it's not what you're thinking it is. And I'm like, no. In my mind, it's going to be night. Like, that's what it's going to be. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't. It was just like a little bit past dusk. That's kind of what it felt like. I felt the temperatures dropped. I saw the birds freaking out. As soon as we had totality, everybody started like cheering and wooing and howling, which is kind of fun. Yeah, it was just such a great experience.
Did you look at it?
I did.
I did too. I did too. Why? Why? I am a full adult. And yet as soon as they said, like, don't look at it, and it was cloudy here, could not. I fully was like using sunglasses and
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I even caught my husband scowling me on video. Are you wearing your glasses? I'm like, no. You need to wear your glasses.
But I saw that video. It was hilarious.
It's just, it is what it is, but it was fine. I can still see, kind of.
It's just like adorable little crescent shapes that cross the path across our vision. Yeah.
Did you go anywhere to go look at it, or were you at your house?
No, I laid on my concrete driveway to watch it.
Comfy. And
the weird thing was I was like, I could use a mattress that is this firmness. I really liked it. Yeah, it was really comfortable. But yeah, it was very cool. It was a cool experience.
Yeah, it was super cool. And hopefully we'll get to do it again in, I don't know, 43 years?
Next time I'm doing some way more witchy shit. I'm very woo-woo by nature. Like, give me a crystal, give me some sage. I want to set intentions and dance naked under the moonlight. And I didn't do any of those things because I was around my octogenarian neighbors. I felt like it would be inappropriate.
Dance naked under the moonlight.
But next time I'm going to. I'm going to be 70. I think I'm going to be like 74 or 75
we're be
years
old. Yeah, by the time we're not going to care. We can just be like the crazy witch ladies of the neighborhood.
We'll blame it on the Alzheimer's. Yeah. That's inevitable to come.
Love it. I just, you know what? I can't wait to get older, and just because I feel like people are not going to judge me because it's going to be like, you're a crazy old lady.
No, they are going to judge you, but you're just not going to care.
It's going to be amazing. Whereas I can't wait for that confidence.
I know. Now I deeply care about every thought every person has had about me. But then
it's gotten better, though, I feel like. I feel like when I was in my 20s, it was a lot worse. Now that I'm in my 30s, I'm starting to let that – I can feel it letting that go a little bit. It's not where I would like it to be, but –
It's wow, that's better. Emotional progress. I don't really understand, Micah. I deeply care about what everyone thinks all the time. It's disgusting.
We'll get better. It's okay. We have 40-something years to prepare for the next one.
It's about progress, not perfection.
It'll be good. All right, so meet us in 40-something years so we can all watch the next Totality Path. It's going to be great.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was super fun.
I'll be totally naked into the path of totality.
Yeah, so see, come see us in 40 years if you want to see Lindsay naked.
Yeah.
There you go. Perfect advertisement right there. Path of Totality.
I'll have my OnlyFans, my witchy OnlyFans. We'll talk about books. We'll talk about crystals. It's going to be great. I'm going to be exactly where I am right now. Just a lot more comfortable with myself.
It's going to be great. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Anyway, so the eclipse, and I think moving on to that, maybe, what are you reading right now? What have you finished reading?
I'm actually going to post a review about this because I've been talking about this the last few episodes, but I finished The School for Good Mothers. And when I tell you, I was in my bed, like trying to clench my muscles because it was late at night when I finished it. And I was sobbing so hard at the end of it that I was like, I'm going to wake Justin up if I don't chill out. It was heart-wrenching.
Oh, no.
Heart-wrenching. I have not cried like that at anything in a really long time, but it was so beautiful. It was so beautiful. But it was full Handmaid's Tale. It was heartbreaking. I absolutely loved it.
Oh, wow. Was it like, I think the last book that I cried, like have a really good cry on was Lessons in Chemistry. So was it like that type of crying or sadder?
No, it was not that kind of crying. It was if you are not mentally in a pretty good place going into that book, do not read it. It is so good. But yeah, no, you have to be pretty stable, which is like, I must have caught me in a real, like a rare moment of stability because I was able to finish it and I loved it. But yeah, I cried.
Okay.
Cried
a lot. So have your mental
get your
shields ready.
Yeah, mental shields ready. Yeah.
So you can survive it.
Exactly. How about you?
Yeah. I just finished reading The Women by Kristen Hanson. Actually, I think I'm saying that right. I hope that's the right last name.
I actually just downloaded the...
Yeah, Kristen Hanna.
Kristen Hanna. Okay, yeah. I just downloaded the audiobook for that.
Yeah, it's... I did the audiobook on it, and I'm glad that I did because it sounded like... It's a little bit long, I think. But like, I think overall, as I went through this whole emotional roller coaster of it where like I was like, oh my gosh, I really like it. Oh, I don't like this anymore. Like this just went like down a whole path that I wasn't expecting it. And then once it ended, like I think I had a little bit more time to kind of understand the journey that she was trying to take us through. So the synopsis of the book is that it's a young woman, like a 21 years old in 1960s, and she volunteers to go and be a nurse in Vietnam. Mm. And like she just did it out of like she just wanted to impress her family, be a hero, trying to get the respect from her dad. Mm-hmm. Because like her dad had this wall of heroes from like people in her family that had served in all the wars. So she wanted to be there. So she just signed up for it without really realizing the consequences of going to an active war area and seeing all of the really horrible things, you know, the amount of like PTSD that these soldiers and people that served in Vietnam came back to the US with was very traumatic. Mm-hmm. And at the time, we didn't really know what PTSD was. So mm-hmm. it was kind of trying to understand like all of these psychological effects that a lot of these vets are coming back with, and like nobody really gets it. I know somebody that served, and some of the stories that he has told me are very, very gory. Some of the things that these people had gone through, it's insane. I think that's kind of what piqued my curiosity about this book. It was because I have known somebody that served, and I kind of wanted to validate the horror things that he saw. And like, yeah, it's...
Well, I think it's amazing that you are like take the time to read something about like based on someone you know's experience. Mm-hmm. Like, I think we tend to like discount the experiences of our elders, and we sort mm-hmm. of put these traumatic events and on some kind of pedestal as if it's like a sign of honor and bravery, but the realities of it are disgusting, you know, in a lot of ways. So
a lot of things that these people had seen, and like how do you, I don't know, live the rest of your life kind of trying to ignore what you have experienced. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of like a lot of what the book was about, like how do you move on from something that has been so traumatic for you. And then normally that's not the type of book that I read. I think we have kind of agreed that I'm like a very happily ever after kind of person, but I was really curious because of my friend that I have known, and I just kind of wanted to see what some other people have gone through. Yeah, it was very intense, so don't recommend it as well if you are in a rough space right now.
Yeah, I would tell you right now that if you were working for PR for this book, I might fire you because I definitely don't.
I know. It I don't want to read it. I know.
No, it sounds hard, but it sounds good.
It was good. Yeah, the book is divided in two parts. The first part is mostly and I think that's my favorite part, is like going through the war and like the things that she's kind of experiencing. Mm-hmm. The second part is her coming home and dealing with the consequences of like experiencing the war, which we normally, what you mentioned, we tend to dismiss. And that was the hardest part for them. It was the adjustment that it takes to be able to go back into like real life, in quotation marks. But it was really great. Totally recommend it. But again, you have to be in the right headspace to do that. But yeah, it was cool. And now I'm trying to find a better book to read, something that's a little bit happier. I don't know what to read now.
Yeah, we need recommendations. We need to pour through our palate cleanser books.
Yeah, we do. I know we do have Kill Trip coming up pretty soon, which I think we've talked about it a few times.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was good.
Nice. Yeah. Well, on that note, should we move into our
happier topic?
I don't know. Yeah. We'll start with a high. We'll start with our best book adaptations of all time. I think Magda and I picked our top three each. And then I put in a couple of honorable mentions. Mm-hmm. And then in our next segment, we'll go through our bottom three. But I think we both universally agreed. We're going to take these out of the canon because we both universally agreed that Jane Austen adaptations rise above any other adaptations in our opinion. Like, we both had them, a bunch of movies that were adaptations of Jane Austen books on our list.
Yeah.
I'm curious, why do you think her books lend themselves so well to movies? Like, what is it about them that draws you in?
For me, it's just like the comfort of you kind of know what's going to happen and it's just like brings you comfort. Like, you know, they're going to go through some struggles, but you know, at the end of the day, the two main people are going to come back together.
Speaking of palate cleansers. Yeah, so
I think to me, like, I just find that so comforting to be able to get into something where I know what's going to happen, but I just kind of want you to tell me old worldly how it's going to go. I don't know. It's
Because there's a bunch. There's multiple versions of Pride and Prejudice. Mm-hmm. There's multiple versions of Emma. Do you have a favorite among the group?
So like, I think if we talk series, the BBC Pride and Prejudice.
I know. Colin Firth in that bathtub.
It's so great. I think, obviously it's going to be like a multi-episode thing. It's a little bit longer, but I think personally, that's the closest adaptation to the book. Yeah, I think many people will agree with that, but it is very long, right?
Here's my one issue with that series. I have one issue with that series, which is... I'm sorry. Yeah. This is very... No, I don't even care. I'm going to lean into my terribleness right now. Everyone in that series that's meant to be attractive and everyone in that series that is unattractive, I only know because some character tells you that they are attractive or unattractive. Yeah. It is not based on the actor's looks at all. Like, there is a poor woman who's just like, she's just a redhead. But in the context of the series, they're like, she's disgusting. I hope she dies. She's hideous. And it's like a very like young, beautiful actress. And it pisses me off every time I watch. I'm like, how dare you?
I don't know why, like, back in the day, they just said that, like, people with red hair were, like, not good looking. And I totally disagree with that.
Careful. We're like, I come from a ginger family. So
that's what I'm saying. I totally disagree with it because, like, I feel like red hair people are just beautiful. And I have family members, too, that have, like, this really bright red hair. And they're freaking gorgeous. So I don't understand where that came from.
So, like, BBC, get it together. It's honestly ridiculous.
What happened? Oh, man. But yeah, I think that's my favorite adaptation is the 1996 BBC series. But that's a series. If I wanted to think of a movie, of course, like I mentioned on my very first episode, 2007, Keira Knightley.
Such a beautiful movie.
It's amazing.
The music is perfect. The acting is perfect. The casting is perfect. I just want to live. I will live in the DVD menu of it that is adaptation.
Perfection.
Happily for weeks on end.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, I was watching that and there's a couple of endings to that movie. I don't know if you know this.
No.
So the American version, it ends with that both of them being in the lake and saying, like, how would you like to call me when you're like, oh, you may call me Mrs. Darcy when you're like on Sundays, or my God is divine, whatever. So that to me, that was the ending. And I'm like, oh, so great. Cheesy, perfect. He loves her. The international version ends with her walking out of her dad's office and like her dad agreeing to let them marry. You know that thing?
Any other men would like to marry my daughters. I'm completely at my leisure.
Exactly. And I always cry. I always get like a little tear when I hear that. But that was the ending of it. And I remember watching this with my college roommates, as you would. You would watch this a lot for the first time. I watched it with her and we're like together. And she had the version from Mexico and that's where it ended. And I was like, that's not the end. Like, what is wrong with you? There's like one more scene where you get to see them acting happily together. And it was
and then Elizabeth doesn't get the last word. Like, that's the whole, that really undercuts the value of her character, like being so strong.
It really does. And I wasn't that weird? Like, yeah, it's why? Weird. I wonder how they decide that. Like, oh, for these countries, you're going to have this ending, but for the other ones, you're going to have it. So anyways, 2007, Pride and Prejudice, American version with that ending of them being on the lake.
Okay.
You need to have that scene. Otherwise, it's meh.
I agree. Do you want to know one of my favorite adaptations? One of my favorite movies, honestly, of all time. Yeah. Clueless.
Oh, love it.
Clueless.
It's an Emma derivative movie.
Yeah, yep. Mm-hmm. Based on Emma. I just think, I love Amy Heckerling, who directed that movie. Like, she's just like, at the time, she was very like a punk female director. Like, no reason that she should have gotten that movie. Just took the source material, made it deeply rooted in the time that the movie was released, but also in other ways not. Like, all of the lingo is sort of made up, but it gives you that same kind of comfort level of being, even though she does date her brother. Let's just set that aside. Does not matter.
We ignore that.
It's adorable. We love it. I think that it still holds up. I could watch that movie every single day. I still love it so much. And I just like, I love Ty as the side character. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's just funny.
Yeah, it's a great comfort movie. And I think now that's considered a classic, right? Because it was from the 90s and it's like a total classic movie.
Stop it. Okay, we're going to move on to our... No, I'm just kidding.
No, but in a good way. And I feel like a lot of like younger people are now finding it. And like,
fashions are still good.
But it's adorable. Yeah. I actually have a little skirt and a jacket that are very similar to that era. And I love it so much.
Yep.
As if. Love it. It's great.
Such a baddie.
Oh my God.
Yeah. No, so good. Okay, should we move to our top three? Each of our top three?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, you do your top three first. I think we have. And then we're going to get into the really fun stuff, which is the muck of our bottom three. But yeah, let's start with your top three.
Let's do it.
One of which we already talked about.
So we already talked about it. But like my number one is going to be 2007 or 2005, whatever it is, Pride and Prejudice movie. I do have another note that I want to mention about this. Mr. Darcy on this one, it's Matthew McFadden, which he was in
Succession.
In Succession.
Could not recover when I made that. He's disgusting in that show as Tom.
It is. It just scams. I tried watching it as I was watching, because I try to revisit that movie every few months. I rewatch it, and I was in the middle of watching Succession, and I went back and watched Pride and Prejudice, and I'm like, nope. I cannot watch this right now because all I can think about is freaking Tom and he's ruining Mr. Darcy for me right now. Now that it's ended, it's been a hot minute. I'm actually able to watch it again.
Such a credit to Matthew McFadden's acting too, that you're like, I
hate this guy.
Want you to live a horrible death in Succession. Womp scams. In Pride and Prejudice, you're like, I just want you to touch me with your ungloved hand. It's a wide range that he has. Yeah.
So, just a little viewer warning situation. If you haven't watched Succession, this is what potentially ruin Pride and Prejudice for for a little bit. So just as a heads up. But then my other two that are my favorite ones too, I have Hunger Games, the very first movie. I really think they did a really good job with the adaptation on it. I think everything as I was reading the book came to life so beautifully. Like everything about the cinematography, the actors. I remember when they first announced Sina's character, which is being played by Lenny Kravitz. And I just remember saying, that's perfect. Like that is
he's so good in it.
Yeah, that's exactly who I had in mind. He was perfect. He was perfect Sina for that role.
Sina and Elizabeth Banks, what great. Like chef's kiss in that
Stanley
movie.
Tucci too, his character was amazing.
I haven't read those books, so it's really interesting to hear that they are too.
It was just like I just remember hearing about the casting and I'm like, oh my God, like everything about this is just perfection. And Jennifer Lawrence, I think you mentioned when we were chatting about this, like nobody really knew her too well.
No, she had only done Winter's Bone, which was she had gotten awards for nominated for awards. But she was not a famous actress at the time. I think they really just stumbled onto a gem of an actress to bring that character to life. Yeah. Because she does seem like... Something I hate in movies is when they're like, she was so little, mm-hmm. she could barely lift a fork. But then she, like, slays dragons or, mm-hmm. you know, is doing... Jennifer Lawrence is someone that I look at that I'm like, yes, I do think that you could go into a forest and mm-hmm. hunt a deer or, like, beat up someone. I love that about her.
Yeah, and it was very... I remember when the movie first came out, it was very controversial because that's... How, in the books, that's how they describe her, as someone that is very malnourished, is very weak and stuff like that. So people were like, oh, my gosh, she needed to lose more weight, which is... Again, I think a topic that we talked about earlier on, like making like a lot of the celebrities like super, super skinny, but like everybody is very different. So I'm glad that they kind of stuck to their guns and they just kind of let her be a normal person.
Playing this character. Yeah, it's not like character. She's overweight even slightly.
Exactly, she's normal.
Right.
So yeah, I think they did such a great job with the movie adaptation. I still love it. Second and third one, I think they were okay. But honestly, I think the first one was honestly one of the best adaptations from the books that I have read.
I do think that movie is great. Yeah.
So it was really good. And then my last one is going to be one of the Harry Potter movies. And it's going to be The Prisoner of Azkaban, which is based on book number 3. Mm-hmm. I think the way that Alfonso Cuarón directed that movie, and personally, I think is the best movie out of all of the movies that came out for Harry Potter. It is beautifully done. I'm going to talk about it again, the cinematography and how dark it came through. It just made such a nice transition into kind of getting the Harry Potter world into a darker territory, because the first two movies were a little bit, yes, there's darker themes, but it's still kind of like childish and not childish, but like childlike.
No, it's hearted. Christopher Columbus mm-hmm. who made like Home Alone, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, I do think you're right. It's as they age, the movies age.
Mm-hmm. So it just kind of made us that really nice introduction into like the darker themes that we're going to be walking through. I think it was beautifully done. It's still one of my favorite movies, and it's one of the ones that I rewatched the most, just because of how well done it was and how true to the book it is.
Yeah, and you know what's weird? I talked about this in our very first episode, but I think now I see this even more, is like parents think that kids are incapable of dealing with things that are scary, and that movie is scary. Like Alfonso mm-hmm. Cuarón does a very good job of delving into like the world of a monster and what monsters feel like. But I think parents forget, like, the world is scary for kids because they don't know anything. Everything is new. Everything is mm-hmm. is unfamiliar. And I love the way that he sort of makes these characters deal with that in a real way, where they're they're encountering the Dementors who are
crazy,
sucking their joy. And it's like, as a kid, you don't really encounter that very often. That should be scary. And yeah, it feels scary in a way that is very real. I mean, obviously, Dementors are not real. But I think that's why it's so successful, because mm-hmm. it really treats young audiences as if they have a brain and have complicated emotional interiors that, mm-hmm. that should be talked about.
Yeah.
And that movie does the best job of really bringing that portion of it to the mm-hmm. forefront, I think.
Yeah, it's like you're exploring those darker territories as a child and trying to make sense of it.
Yes.
And they did, yeah. It's
and treating it with seriousness. It's not something that's washed away right away. It's like, you know my obsession with this. Like, mm-hmm. life is scary and there's not always going to be an adult mm-hmm. there to save you.
Yeah.
And I think that movie... I mean, you know, this is like a theme in my life. I'm obsessed with these. But I totally
I figured you would like this, because I feel like based on the, you know, Wrinkling Time and what we talked about with like his art materials, I think this kind of fits into that space of like the kids being brave and trying to figure things out. So yeah, it's one of my favorites. Still rewatch it quite a bit to this day. So yeah, those were my top three.
What do you think about the Harry movies overall? Sorry, I'm interrupting.
No, you're good.
But
you're good.
I'm like, just because I think this is like a very hot topic, and then I will delve in quickly to my three movies because they're less interesting. But like, as a series, do you think it's successful?
Yes, I think they did a pretty good job, especially for movies. I did hear a rumor that potentially HBO or Max is looking into doing a series, which I am obsessed with, because I think the books honestly did. These are really long, big books. Mm-hmm. So I think the movies did the best that they could with such like so much material and kind of trying to put them together to make sense. I thought they were really successful. I still watch them at least maybe like once a year, potentially like around Christmas time. I don't know why Harry Potter makes me cozy around Christmas, so mm-hmm. I just kind of want to watch it then.
Christmas movie, yeah.
So to me, they're very successful. But I am kind of intrigued about the possibility of doing a series because I feel like that has the potential of being even better. Sorry, I just cracked my knuckles if you heard that in the mic. This is me fidgeting. I need to have like something to fidget with, and it's my fingers, the ones that made it through. But yeah, what do you think about him? Cause I like him.
I think I said this last episode, I came to the series of Harry Potter late in life. And so I started with the movies, and I would get so annoyed when I would go with my friends who were rabid about them, and they would be like, they changed this, they changed that. It's like, yeah, no shit. The book is like 600 pages long. They're not gonna.
Yeah.
So for me, like as standalone movies, they are successful. I understand the story. I get at a high level, like the depth of the character relationships. Mm-hmm. They look good for the most part. I mean, I think we have some exceptions, but I remember in, there's a scene in one of the Deathly Hallows movies where Harry and Hermione are like dancing to Nick Cave. Mm-hmm. And like, that is such a beautiful, this is a kid's series in theory, right? Yeah. That is such a beautiful moment of like friendship. And like, I'm getting teary eyed even talking about it, but like, they're beautiful. They're beautiful. Mm-hmm. And then when I read the books, which I have now read them multiple times over, the richness comes in. I think you get the details of it, but I don't feel like it took away from the visual beauty of mm-hmm. the movies at all. And yeah. Say what you will about J.K. Rowling, I think you and I both have complicated feelings about how she has dismantled the legacy of these books and what they meant to people our age. Part of me will never forgive her for that. But as a series of movies, beautiful. Love them.
Really good job. Yeah. And I think you're right. I think what you mentioned about their friendship, I think sometimes in the online community, some people are like, oh, Hermione should have ended up with Harry Potter, but I'm like, I don't think so. I fully disagree, because to your point, it's about like growing up and like having friendship and like really strong friends mm-hmm. in your life. Like nothing has, I'm a romance reader. I love it. But like not all books have to be about like, and the two main characters or whatever ended up together. Like it doesn't have to be that. I think it's just all about the growth of the characters.
I agree. I mean, I do hate Ron, and I do think there was more chemistry, but I am one of those people that I'm like, I don't know. But I'm with you. I'm more interested in the idea of platonic relationships mm-hmm. and the depth that those can go in. I love that as a topic, and I think that's like a really beautiful
agreed
version of it.
Yeah, and you know, you touched on it too, like with the J.K. Rowling thing, and like, yeah, it does bring up really complicated feelings, because I feel like it's ruining, and I think I mentioned this, Harry Potter was one of those books that kind of brought me back into the reading journey, and now it's just making it more difficult. I'm never going to stop liking them, but it does kind of bring very complicated feelings of like, I'm supporting somebody that I don't really agree on with things, but hopefully.
Separating art from artists. I have really mixed feelings really about this. Hard. Because usually I feel like, nah, we can find someone else that's better. And this is like so embedded in the fabric of our childhood. Mm-hmm. It's so hard to disentangle it. But man.
Yeah. Stop. Yeah. Come on, JK.
Get together. Get off Twitter.
Get it together. Go enjoy all your money. It's fine. Prisoner of Azkaban. That was my third one.
We really went on a Harry Potter tour. That was going to be a longer episode, and I think that's great because this just shows how excited we are about mm-hmm. this topic.
How passionate. And this is only like our top three. I think there's going to be potentials for us to kind of have like other episodes about this on like other adaptations.
I agree. And especially as we, like, mm-hmm. again, we only pick books that we had read. So I think as we read more and get more content.
we'll get there. What about you? What are your top three?
My top three. Okay, number one, Breakfast at Tiffany's.
I've never read the book. I have seen the movie, and it is amazing.
So Truman Capote wrote the book. Mm-hmm. It's not a book. It's a novella, but I think it's a novella. Uh-oh. Don't yell at me if I got that wrong.
You're good.
It's been a long
time. Grace. We're giving grace in this show.
but I think that... One, that movie, an instance where I saw that movie as a kid, and it was one of the first times that I had saw a movie that was like an older movie, and Holly Golightly as a character just draws you in so intensely. And I didn't really even understand the nuances of the fact that she was basically like doing things that were illegal, operating as an escort, like lived this very bohemian life. I don't know how they got away with making that movie, but it is such a beautiful story of the messiness of like emotional relationships and how someone can be appearing to have everything on the outside and then just like falling apart on the inside.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the book and the movie are both really successful. They, like, make it seem really fun. You're, like, really on this, like, journey with Holly and Paul and, like, wanting to, like, be her and dress like her and live her life. And then watching how it's just a farce, basically.
Yeah. Very topical with social media nowadays, honestly. You know, you only get to see what you want to show, but, like, you don't know what's going on behind the scenes and the complexities that goes behind people's lives.
Exactly right. I think the only thing that I have that I think is complicated about the differences between the book and the movie is, one, I love the movie as a standalone thing, right? It ends really happily. The two main characters fall in love. They end in a passionate kiss. She finds Kat again. In the book, she does not find Kat again. And she does not see the main character ever again. They do not end up together. And it's made more explicit that the main male character, who is not named in the book, is probably gay. And so it is truly about this platonic true love that these people have, that they make each other better. They see each other through hard times. And we were just talking about this. I love stories like that. And I think the book is really interesting in that it really explores that as a topic and then explores the breakdown of that relationship, because again, they don't end up together, and like how, if you don't embrace an opportunity for love, it can leave you.
Yeah.
And that like devastated me when I first read it. I was like, that is art. And then I like the movie because it like it's ends beautiful. On a more positive note, and you get that like satisfaction of a romance love, but they give you different things. And I think that's what makes an adaptation successful, is it's working with the source material, but like making its own identity. And that maybe, I don't know, it does that for me.
You know what? You're absolutely right. And I think that's kind of like what all the books and movies that we have kind of just discussed is, like, they may not be like true adaptations, but it just brought something that it just made it very special for you to kind of relive it in a different way.
Exactly right.
Yeah. So yeah, that's beautiful book, Lindsay. Love that.
Oh gosh. Yeah. Okay. What is my next one?
Yeah.
The Princess Bride.
Very controversial opinion. I have never seen the movie.
What? Mm-hmm. Have you read the book?
Never.
Mm-mm. Oh my gosh.
And you know, like, I've seen like some of the clips here and there. Like, one of my favorite memes is like the horse riding, but they're just like ragging the thing with the coconuts, and then they're just doing that.
Oh, that's not The Princess Bride. That is.
Oh, which one was doing? No. Never mind. I am confusing it with Monty Python. Yeah, so as you can see, I have never seen The Princess Bride.
That is a great clip, not from the movie we're discussing.
So as you can tell, I have never seen The Princess Bride.
Hey, I'm on an island here, guys. Help me out. Somebody, I found the one person in the universe who has not seen The Princess Bride.
So embarrassing. No. Maybe that's going to be my homework, but I've never read the book, never seen the movie. And it's supposed to be a classic.
People it is. Love it. Well, and the movie is a really close. I mean, the movie and the book are extremely close adaptations. Yeah. It is, again, it's something I'm obsessed with. It's childlike wonder in adult characters. Like, it's a true, like, fairy tale. Mm-hmm. It's silly. It's funny. I don't know. That book and that movie are just, the characters are beautiful. It's hilarious. Yeah. It makes me feel like it's a chicken broth movie, like, makes you feel better when you watch it, which is funny because it starts out with this sick kid and his grandfather's reading him the story. That's the whole thing of it. And William Goldman, who wrote the book, was a screenwriter. He wrote like Heat, which is like a very serious cop drama. So I think that's why it's successful, is like, they're clearly had some kind of other medium in mind. So it just works really well.
So for somebody that hasn't read the book or watched the movie, what do you recommend for me? Should I read the book? Yeah. Should I read the book, or should I just do
it? It's such a true adaptation. I honestly think the movie...
it's enough.
Yeah, and like looking at Robin Wright and Carrie Elwes for 2 hours, like, is going to be... Yeah, just let them land on your eyeballs. It's going to be great for you.
I do love Robin Wright, so that is...
she's great.
And I didn't know she was in it. I don't know why I got confused with Monty Python.
It's the best version of her hair, too. It is mermaid hair. Oh, God, I wanted that hair so badly. Yeah, anyway.
She's gorgeous.
that's my best number two.
She is total... Yeah. Anyways, let's move on to number three before I keep embarrassing myself.
No, I love that. Honestly, that was
hilarious.
Okay. Number three, Little Women. Again, there are two versions that are pretty good, right? There's the 94 version with Winona Ryder and Laura Dern and Kirsten Dunst.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then there's the most recent one with Greta Gerwig, which I also love. And I love them for different reasons. Okay. And then the Louisa May Alcott book is just like, it's a solid source material. It's just a great book about sisters and the bond that they have with each other. I like the 1994 version because it's true to the source material. But also Kirsten Dunst is such a little shit in that movie that it is like, for me, like such a visceral way to be like, this is a sisterly bond. You know, I don't know if you have sisters, but it's like, it's, you know, I love them, but like, it's a tough relationship.
Oh yeah. Talk about complicated relationships with your sisters.
I mean, yeah, she burns Joe's manuscript. Like, there's a scene in that movie where I can't remember the youngest character's name right now, Kirsten Dunst's character right now. I'm so sorry. But she falls into a lake and Joe saves her. And I just thought, like, you should let that little shit plummet right to the bottom for...
Just die.
And, like, that's what the movie does well, right? It's, like, that complicated relationship and, like, the roles that you play with your siblings that, like, carry on in life. And I like the Greta Gerwig version because it really builds on why the characters are the way they are. I really wish that I remembered who the youngest sister's name was right now. It's totally escaping me. So we'll look that up as we're talking. But, like, I think she becomes a much more sympathetic character and sympathetic foe to Joe in that, you know, you just see her as, like, a little kid. Yeah.
I was trying to find the name.
I can't believe.
Amy.
Amy. Thank you. Yeah. This is my favorite, and I can't remember one of the characters' names. It's just because I'm on the spot. But Amy, who is played by Florence Pugh in that version, she gets a lot more life. She gets a lot more, like, she's more textured as a character. You, like, sort of understand why she ends up with Lori. Yeah.
To me, like, I did watch the Greta's version. I haven't seen the one from 1990s, but maybe I'll check that one out. But I feel like Greta's did kind of demonstrate, like, a more in-depth character development, but like, just you do kind of get to understand some of the decisions a little bit more.
You don't hate Amy as much, right? Like, you see why she is the way she is because she's operating under the confines where she has basically no choice.
Yeah, and, like, it's so... It's easy for us to kind of put ourselves back into that time frame and be like, oh, I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't say that. But, like, you're being raised in those beliefs and that's your only chance to survive. Like, you do what you can. Like, you have to follow the rules and that's how you survive in those times. As much of a feminist as I would have been, would like to believe I would have been back in the day, I don't think.
But Joe is, I mean, Joe was a feminist, right? I guess, like, she really does pursue her dreams. She doesn't go after... the romantic interest of the movie and then of the book. I love that. I think it's just weird and interesting. Like, Louisa May Alcott was very punk for doing that. I don't know. I can't believe she didn't have her main characters end up together. I like, love that she put her foot down. And then Joe ends up wearing just, like, a random professor who's, like, a lot older than her. That is also, it's revolutionary, you know?
True, yeah.
Anyway, I love those. And then I have to give a couple of honorable mentions. Which are, like, Stephen King novels have a weird number of really good movies based on them. I was looking through. They're not my favorite because I hate horror.
I don't like to read scary movies.
But, like, The Shining, either. Misery, The Shawshank Redemption, those are all based on Stephen King novels. And I was just like, man, I mean, he writes 7,000 books a year, so I kind of get it. It's just the numbers at that point. But, man, lots of good ones. Anyway, those are my top three.
A really good one. Did he also do It?
He did It as well.
Yeah, that was it, right? I was trying to look it up and see. Okay.
He did It.
I'm just not, I'm not really big into, like, the scary movies, but I know that he's done really...
Really good ones.
Really good ones. It's just scary books or scary movies, man.
They are. Anyway, those are our top adaptations. So we're going to take a quick break and then we'll come back with the bottom, the dregs.
Get ready to rumble.
All right. Thanks, everyone.
Bye.
Okay, welcome back. Thanks, everyone. We are going to get into our bottom three movie adaptations.
Ooh, maybe controversial. I think not. I think people can agree with these next ones, but we'll see. We're about to find out.
I'm so excited to talk about this. Okay, number one for me, I'm going to start us out, is The Golden Compass. As you know, I love the His Dark Materials series. There was a Golden Compass movie with Nicole Kidman.
Yeah, it was not great.
Insane.
It was not great.
I don't even know where to start with it other than it, like, looked bad. The acting was weird. And the books are, they deal with heavy topics. They're dark. And something that I, and they knew the movie was shit. And I know that they knew the movie was shit because they changed the ending.
Oh.
They changed the ending. Mm-hmm. In the original first book, the ending is traumatic. Basically, one of the main characters betrays our main female character, Lyra, by doing something to one of her friends. I'm not going to give this away, even though this book is now years old at this point, but I want everyone to read it. In the movie, she just, like, learns about who her father is. The main character learns about who her father is, and it's just, like, the end, and everything is happy. Bright and happy, and it's like, you knew the shit was going to get canceled, and so you couldn't end on this dark note, and it made me so mad, because the whole point of the book is this moment that they cut out is the moment where Lyra sort of becomes an adult. She, like, realizes that adults in her life are complex. They're not all universally good, and she has to decide what path she wants to go down. And it's like, you're removing the heart and soul.
Oh, no.
It made me mad.
So I haven't read the book, but I did attempt to watch that movie, and I couldn't even finish it.
Yeah.
Like, that's how bad it was.
It looks terrible.
So I am really sad that they just did such a disservice to one of your favorite books. Like, that is, it's heartbreaking when that happens to you, when you're like, have these books that meant so much to you.
Yeah.
And, like, I understand, like, you try to do your best and, like, the books don't come out or they don't represent what you're thinking. But for them to just so fully, like, make it bad, it's just so, breaks my heart.
It makes me mad. Yeah. And that's the difference between you and me. You, like, you dig into your sympathy and I'm like, I'm going to burn this house down. I'm so annoyed. So that's my first one. My second one is Coraline. Mm-hmm. Have you ever read any Neil Gaiman before?
No, I didn't. I did watch that movie, though.
Mm-hmm. What did you think of it?
It was fine. I couldn't even tell you, like, what the plot of it is at this point. I just remember watching it, and it was, like, a few years ago, and I never went back to it.
So I love Neil Gaiman. He's a fantasy author. He makes a lot of more, like, dark children's books, but also books for adults. And the animation of that movie is cool, and so I had really high hopes. It's Henry Selick, who did, like, The Nightmare Before Christmas and things like that.
That one, that's a great movie.
Oh, we should talk about that. I disagree. Oh, but that,
interesting.
Yeah.
I love that movie. I'm just kidding. I do like it.
But it looks cool. I think it looks cool. But the thing about that story is it's about a girl, Coraline, who moves into a new house. She has sort of really quirky neighbors. And, like, scary things happen to her. Like, duplicates of her family members show up. And they're basically trying to suck her into this alternate universe. The movie comes off cruel in a way the book does not. And the animation only works against the story. So for me, it just wasn't...
Just didn't work.
Like, even right now, I'm, like, struggling to come up with, like, anything more to say about it. It's exactly what you're saying. Like, it was just boring. It wasn't good.
Yeah, like, I just remember watching it, and I'm like, oh, okay. And I think I watched it, I don't know, over 10 years ago. Is that right? Like, how long ago did this come? It's been a hot minute, right? I think I even watched it. I went to the movie theaters and I watched it. But I just never watched it.
It was just
again.
Like weird for weirdness' sake. Yeah. And the book is weird for story's sake. And that, so I just find that really annoying. But,
It is funny that you truly do have a theme about, like, dark children's stories that you like.
I know.
Very interesting. Again, we're leaning back into, like, Lindsay likes the trauma. I love it. It's so amazing.
Oh, no.
But in a good way, though. That's good.
In a good way. Okay, I'm going to lean back further in this couch so that you can give me a therapy session about how to work. I'm just kidding. I live a very happy life. I'm a happy person.
Jeez, I can vouch for that.
I'm happy. I'm just overtly grumpy. Okay, last one is a little bit of a cheat for me, but I want to talk about it because I know that you have a lot to say about it. I refuse to read these books. I will never do it. You can write me comments till the end of time. I'm never gonna do it. And that is Stephenie Meyer's Twilight.
My
hatred of those movies is unending. I hate them. I hate them. I hate them. I hate them. I could like sit on this microphone and say how much I hate them for hours. And it is because they should be campy. They should be fun because the choices at every level are insane. The wigs are insane. The editing is insane.
The acting is so
bad. The acting is insane. I have never seen something in my life where I'm like, wow, we have the makings of perfection here. We have a huge budget. We have amazing actors. Kristen Stewart is like a great actor. You have
Robert Pattinson is a great actor. Yeah, too.
Michael Sheen, Dakota Fanning. Mm-hmm. Like, this should be a win, top to bottom. And when I tell you, like, everyone was like, no, watch the movies. They're fun. They're silly. No, they're not. Stop telling yourselves this. Stop traumatizing us who didn't go through the books, because they are not good. I love a campy movie. I love a shitty. I will watch anything. I love Housewives. I truly, Dregs of Society, I'll watch it all. Those movies make no sense. They look like shit. The acting is, I'm worried so much for Bella Swan, because someone should be locking her up in a psychiatric facility. Mm-hmm. These people are not in high school. I don't know what high school they're attending. It's a loony bin. The only person who is a bright ray of light in this is Anna Kendrick. And they're like, get away from us, you disgusting troll, at every turn. And I'm just like, she's just like a nice girl, like trying to like liven this fucking dark town up a little bit. I hate them. Anyway, that's my rant on Twilight. I don't get it.
You know what? I wonder if that's what it is, because you didn't read the books. And I do also have Twilight as like one of my worst adaptations, but it is one of those things that it was so bad that I can't help but not to watch it. Like, I want to keep watching it because of how ridiculous and how bad the movies are, that I think in my mind it is campy already, and I just laugh every single time I watch
the movies. It's the trifecta. It's bad acting, bad filmmaking, which is part of it that I hate, and like bad story. It's tough.
Yeah, The books, I read the books. I was in college when I read all of them, and I was obsessed with it. I tried rereading them recently, and I was just like, holy crap, this is really bad. Like, I just, like, rereading the books, I'm like, what was I thinking, 18-year-old me?
Telling me about the blank pages in the first book, where I was like, I have...
Was it book two with, like, when the months were passing by?
Yes, where months are passing by, mm-hmm. and Bella's sad, I guess. Yeah. Shocking. She's always sad. She's a miserable little beast. And, yeah, there's no content on the pages. It's so emo.
I think that whole... You're right. Like, I think it's just... Flynn's a lot about depression, kind of, and, like... I don't want to say undertones, because it's very, like, on the page. And how dependent she's become on this one dude. It is kind of crazy. And you're like, Bella, you're 18. Like, you're fine. Like, you're going to get over it. But, like, yeah, you just can't stop reading it and watching it. And it's crazy. But, yeah, I do have it. It's really, really bad movies. I do remember very vividly watching the second part of the fourth book. I mean, of the fourth movie. And they changed the ending of the movie, and I remember being in the movie theater and like screaming like, what the F are they doing? They just changed the entire thing, and I took it so personal. But
you're the audience. What are they, like, if you're gonna make a choice, it better be a good choice.
I mean, like, they did it, and then like at the end of it, it's like, oh, it was all like a vision from Alice, and that's why like everything kind of changed and blah, 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 because they needed to have a little bit more action on that last movie. So I totally get it, but like, I took it so personally, but now I love it. But it is one of those movies where it's just like, I hate watching the movie, but in like a fun way. Like, that's how much it is. And I don't know, there's like so many memes about like, there's my favorite is like when Robert Pattinson, like on the first movie, he's holding his nose, trying not to smell her. And it's just so funny and stupid and hilarious.
That's what I mean by like, I love it. Choices are wild. The choices are wild. Oh, yeah. I talk about like traumatizing a young woman, a very vulnerable time in her life. And he was like, you're disgusting. You're I hate you. Get away from me, you lecherous psycho. And she's like, I love him. He's perfect for me. I don't.
That's great.
The only thing I can say is like, I think the actors knew what they were getting into, because any single one of them, if you ask them about those movies, are like,
it was ridiculous.
Trash, garbage, whatever. But I personally, my interpretation is that the books were also pretty bad.
Yeah, the books, yeah. And like, I think when I read them the first time, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm obsessed with it. I love the story, blah, blah, blah. But again, I tried to reread them, and I'm like, I couldn't get through them. So it was just young me, like, I don't know, with this idea of like, oh, true love. But then when you read it back, you're like, oh, this was not true love. This is like some psychotic
people.
Someone
needs to check on Stephanie Meyer and make sure that she's
okay.
She's okay, that she's in regular therapy, because...
Yeah, it's not great. It. But I do rewatch the movies here and there just because of like how bad they are. And it's just, to me, it's just amazing. It's just so bad that it's good at this point. But not because, if you want to watch them, just kind of take that in the, you know, with a grain of salt. Like, going it, expect like a very ridiculous bad movie, and then you might enjoy them. If you hate watching.
I can't even finish them. What's your second worst?
I have Twilight, and I think this is going to tie in kind of nicely together, because I'm going to put 50 Shades of Grey, another terrible books. Like, the books were so bad.
But did you, like, do you read them?
I read them.
Did you, like, even get the enjoyment of being, like, it's, like, a guilt read? No, they were
no,
just bad.
No, it was just bad. I read them, and it was just, like, okay, cool. Like, this is just kinky stuff, and like the stories are really bad. You're also kind of like, this poor girl also has like a lot of issues. But again, I don't know if anybody knows this. I'm sure everybody, a lot of people may know this, but like 50 Shades of Grey is based on like Twilight. Like, it's like a fan fiction of Twilight. That's how it started. So like the author E.L. James, like, she started doing this, writing the story based on like inspired by Twilight. So that's probably why the both female characters kind of have a lot of issues, I think, and they could have done much better.
I mean, I just, I want to be like, are you in therapy? I'm worried about, why do we love these traumatized women so much?
And like the girl and the women just kind of fall in love with these really problematic characters, and like they want to try to save them in a way. I don't know. This could just be like my personality in my mid-30s, where I'm thinking like, no, like, you don't have to save anybody, just get out.
But that's not a personality. That is good judgment that you have. That's good judgment. Yeah,
but the movies were really bad. The acting was horrendous. I did not think there was even any chemistry between Dakota Johnson and Jamie Dornan.
They notoriously hated each other, and right?
I feel like you could tell that, because they just did not have any chemistry at all. The movies were, and the acting was so, so bad as well. Don't recommend. And that's one of those that aren't even like rewatch for hate watching. It was just plainly bad. Mm. But again, the source material was also pretty horrendous. So I don't think they had too much to go on, outside of people that maybe just kind of loved it. And it was their first intro into smutty books, I guess. So maybe that's why they got into it. I don't know. But
let's look into like sexually healthy.
I guess.
A sexually and emotionally healthy fanfic. I'm interested in that.
I guess so. Like, this one was just, maybe I'm just a prude, but I just did not think it was that good. So anyways, that's my second option. It was 50 Shades of Grey. And then my third one, Percy Jackson. It's one of my favorite like series that I read when I was younger. Loved the books, and it's about, you know, the sons of like Greek gods and stuff like that. And they're like mixed with humans, so they're like half gods, half like human. And it was such a beautiful story. I read them when I was really young. I was in high school, and they tried to do a couple of movies. One of them, it's Alexa Daddario, I think is her name.
Alexandra Daddario.
Yeah, that's it. Thank you. I'm terrible with names. I'm trying to get better at them, but it's horrendous.
We've had strokes during this episode, which is why I couldn't remember Amy's name, and we're getting actors' names left and right. Look, we're not Google, all right? We're just two ladies trying to get through our day, so
I'm just trying to remember who were the actors in it.
Alexandra Daddario from White Lotus.
Yeah, she was in it. And, like, you know, so they had, like, really good actors in them and everything.
I mean, really good actors is generous.
but there were other people outside of her, but they had, like, some really, like, really good people in there. Pierce Brosnan was in it, too. But, like, just the movies in general, like, there's so much really good materials in it, and they made two movies, and both of them were just pretty horrendous. The cinematography was terrible. The acting was bad. It just, they didn't do the justice. And I know that a lot of people out there feel very, very passionate about this series, because it's beautifully written. It's such a nice, I don't want to say coming of age, because it's like based on Greek mythology. Mm-hmm. But it was such a nice like adventure story that I enjoyed. And I think I read this while I was reading Harry Potter. So it was just kind of like fill my void, as you know, when you were reading other things. Yeah. It was kind of nice. But the movies were really bad. I just did not like them. It was terrible. I did hear that apparently there's talks about potentially doing another HBO series. I don't know if that's going to come to fruition or not, but I really do hope that they do it justice, because there's a really big following of people in this series, and I can't believe that we haven't had a good version of it yet.
HBO really knows how to do that. They know how to pace a longer series in episodes that make sense to really mm-hmm. flesh out what's important in the book. So I haven't read those books. I know that was on every list of mm-hmm. worst adaptations. So
it was so bad. And yet, like, the books are really quick and easy. I think you might actually like them. Like, it's a lot of Greek mythology, but it was so fun to kind of learn about all these gods and stuff and all of, like, the adventures and things that they had to do and, like, how little the gods cared for their kids. It was kind of... Actually, you might really like this, Lindsay, because the kids get abandoned by their parents.
I love you, Mom. I love you very much. I'm so sorry.
So you might actually really enjoy this. But, you know, it was really, really good. I'm sorry, Lindsay. I didn't mean to make fun of your trauma.
It was not my trauma. My mother is a goddess, though.
Yeah,
so.
Yes. We love Lindsay's mom. But, yeah, no, it's really funny. Totally recommend it. I think there's not very many books. I think 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, only 5 books. Really short and easy, and it's a really nice story. And I really, really hope that HBO makes a series, like, and does it justice. But I feel like they didn't do a good job with His Dark Materials, so now I'm a little scared.
No, they did.
They did?
Okay. I thought it was good. It was, it was good.
Okay.
It was good.
Okay, good. So still hope a little bit. I'm crossing all my fingers here that they make it.
Cool.
Yeah, and then I just have honorable mention, and this is just more for my, like, rom-com people. There's this book called The Hating Game that was written by Sally Thorne. I love the book. It has like one of my favorite tropes, which is like enemies to lovers. It's these two people that work together and then they just like make their lives miserable. It's such a nice book. It's very lighthearted and it's so cute. And they made a movie about it. It's actually on Hulu. You can go watch it. It's called The Hating Game. But the movie was not good and the acting was really bad and it was really sad because I feel like a rom-com is so easy to adapt.
Yeah.
And this one, they just didn't work very well and it was really
no
sad.
No chemistry.
The acting was very average. I think it was just like a very low budget movie. And like, you don't need a high budget to make these movies, but it just came across as very like poor budget. Like, it just didn't come across really well.
Yeah.
It was just done really poorly. I still watch it here and there once in a while, but it's just one of the things that I just kind of put on just because I love the book and it just didn't do it justice.
Yeah.
It was so bad. And yeah, anything else? Any other thoughts? Any other movies that we want to hate on?
No, but we'll keep thinking about it and keep updating the list. I feel like I've spent all my energy talking shit about Twilight. So.
Twilight, it's a very divisive topic. I get it.
Should we take a break and come back and do book news and farewells? This has been a longer episode for us, so we'll rush through our book news, but we'll take a quick break and come back.
All right. We'll be right back.
All right. Welcome back, everyone. We are going to do this week's book news to wrap up our third episode. Magda, I think you have some interesting things coming out of Colorado, right?
Yeah. So out of this week, we heard that there was a book that was returned to one of the Colorado libraries that was 109 years past due. Somebody went back to the library, returned it, and it wasn't...
was the person...
What?
It was the person 109...
No, it was just the book was so due from 109 years.
So it was obviously a child of... Sorry, guys. I'm imagining like a 100-year-old person just crawling into a library, returning their book on their deathbed.
No, apparently, like, I was reading a little bit more about it. It was somebody found the book when their one, like, a person passed away. And they returned it? They found the book and they're like, oh, we're just going to go ahead and return it and give it back to the library. And they did.
That's really responsible.
Yeah, it was really nice. It was 109 years old, the book, how long it had been passed due. I think somebody did the math, and apparently based on the late fees, based on 1919, it would have been $760, which translates to about $14,000 in late fees.
$14,000.
So, but
in 1919, that person's not recovering from that financially.
No, that's worth more than my Accord. Just going to put that out there. But anyways, so they went back and returned it. Fortunately, the library got rid of the past due fees. So this person doesn't have to pay that anymore. So they're totally fine. And now they're going to put the book in a special case and put it out for display.
What was the book?
Ivanhoe by Sir Walter Scott. I've never read that book, so I don't know what it
that
is.
That would be a book that I definitely would not return to the library to.
I'm like, I'm just going to keep this. It's fine. But yeah, fun little story out of Colorado.
Very cool.
Yeah.
I also heard that they are releasing a new Bridget Jones movie. Did you hear that? Bridget Jones 4? Based on the book by Helen Fielding.
Yeah, I think I saw a little bit of a headline, but I don't know much about it. But I'm kind of curious what the storyline is going to be on
Bridget
this one.
Bridget has been everywhere, done everything. She's mm-hmm. like, let Bridget live. I don't know that we need a fourth movie, but I'll keep my
She's just trying to raise her open. Baby, like, or maybe her big kid now. Has to be older.
Like, this is, I guess I like it in that we were talking a couple weeks ago about wanting to see stories about older yes. characters. So I think in that vein, it's really good. But my goodness, they are
milking this.
They are beating the crap out of this poor dead horse. Yeah.
Yeah. So that should be interesting. I guess maybe next year or the year after.
Yeah. Yeah.
When it comes out, we'll talk about we'll it talk and about see what it. The story is about.
Yeah.
But that should be a good one.
I also read, coming from The Guardian this week, I thought this was really fascinating. We talked about the School for Good Mothers at the top of the episode. They published an article that said that horror genre sales are up 54% year over year this year.
Oh my gosh, that's a lot.
I know. And they said a lot of the driving storylines are around female-centered stories, particularly involving consent and motherhood. And I just thought that was so interesting because I'd read The School for Good Mothers. That's a big portion of it. Mm-hmm. And there's just something about, I mean, we know there's not something. It's what's happening in society right now. People are really invested about stories of the scariness of being a woman.
Yeah, it is. It is very scary. I try not to think about it, but 54%. It is very scary.
It's like that meme. I don't know if you've seen that where it's like, it's asking women if they'd rather be left in the forest alone with a bear or a man, and universally.
Most of them, everybody picked a bear.
Look, something's going on. Men, you need to do better. But I thought that was a really interesting sort of marker of where we're at in history right now.
Yeah,
so.
That is actually, fascinating. I mentioned earlier, I'm not really big into like horror movies or like books. So I'm kind of curious to see like what, is there like mostly driven by like one writer or like an author, like what is driving this? Like,
I think women are just like really feeling like they can relate. I mean, one, I think we know that women drive like a lot of book sales, but yes. Two, I think women are feeling that fear right now and finding something that they recognize in those books.
Interesting.
Anyway, super interesting.
All right.
Yeah. On lighter topics, yeah. I think you have a lighter topic.
Yeah, I was going to say, speaking of the opposite of that, Minnesota just opened their very first romance-specific bookstore.
Where I was born.
I know. Big deal. So it should be really good. I think the name of the bookstore is called Tropes and Trifles.
Tropes and Trifles.
Such a cute name. But I think this is just part of like a bigger movement going on. This is not the first like romance-specific bookstore. I think New York and LA have a really big one. I think you know the name of it.
The Ripped Bodice.
Yeah. So it's like the New York Times.
San Francisco, I think. The New York Times did a piece about it recently.
Yeah. Like a really massive thing. Like, I think maybe kind of with what you were mentioning, like, I think maybe for a lot of women or people that they just kind of want to feel that comfort, they're kind of gravitating towards these type of spaces.
Community,
which is kind of
nice.
Community kind of ties back to the theme of our first episode.
And it's legitimizing romance as a genre, which I think is long overdue. Yeah. So
it's super cute.
Very
and
cool.
So I'm kind of glad. I was really surprised that, like, Minnesota, like, gonna open that up, but it's so exciting.
Minnesota's progressive, it's cool.
And no, but I meant like, because I only had heard about this in like, I think London has one, New York and San Francisco, and that's it, that's all I've heard.
There's a lot of lonely, dark winters in Minnesota, so if anyone needs a little romance in their life during a sad time, it's Minnesota women.
I'm very jealous, and I really do want to go check it out, so I'm excited. I've never been to Minnesota, but maybe this will give me an excuse to go check it out.
Yeah, we'll keep updating you as we stumble on more news stories this week. And
yeah, should be good.
I think we have some cool things coming up. We're doing a Bridgerton deep dive
pretty soon. I'm excited.
In preparation for the show, we'll be all things Bridgerton soon. So I'm super pumped for that.
Me too. Again, romance writer over here, so I can't wait to talk about it a little bit more.
So we'll post a recap of the book news here on our Instagram at _literallypod, and also include some of the things that we have coming up, I think, too.
Yeah, that sounds good. And then, make sure to follow us. You can find me at _literallymagda.
And I'm at _literallylindsay. And thank you for joining us today on Literally Books, the podcast, where we say what we read.
And we mean what we say.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you all. Bye.
Bye.
Everybody. So I think now we're going to talk a little bit about some of the book news of this week.
Okay, this is...
take us 45 minutes.
Okay.